SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
Oh my God.
What?
It says, is anyone out there?
Hey there, folks. You are blasting off with Orville Land. It's our weekly look at the TV show The Orville. This is the podcast that says, no, sir, I don't want your chocolate mud cake. For my birthday, I want ice cream. Guys, anyone? Okay.
I just got it taken aback.
We are joined, as we always are, by Lieutenant Shelley Peacock. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
And also Ensign Sid Sharma.
Still haven't graduated to Lieutenant, but I'm still here.
Yeah, one day.
One day.
Yeah, when you pass the exam. Guys, we're here to talk about an episode of The Orville. Shelley, what's the episode called?
All the World is Birthday Cake.
Indeed. And the name comes from what?
A Beatles song written by George Harrison, my all-time favourite Beatle.
Now, this is a Yellow Submarine song, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, coincidentally, when I was walking to the studio after I got my lunch just a short while ago, I walked past the news agency. Out the front, they had some Beatles Yellow Submarine, like, toys, like Matchbox-style cars.
What?
$3 a piece.
Did you nab it?
No, I didn't even think to do it.
Oh, Dan.
If I'd put two and two together, I'd have one right now to hand and pass over to you as a gift.
What a shame.
Mm. But, you know, I didn't, so Here we are.
Sad.
You really do have my pity.
Now, Shelley, we usually kick this off with some sort of description as to what we experienced this week on The Orville. Would you please do us the honour?
Most certainly. Kelly suggests a joint birthday party with Bortus.
Is this an order?
No, it's just a thought.
Ah, then I do not wish to have a joint party.
And the USS Orville make first contact with an exciting new star system.
Oh, baby! This is it! This is what we signed up for!
While a new crew member joins the ship.
You punched your last captain in the face?
I did, sir.
And new crew member, so this is replacing regular cast member, what, Alara?
Mm-hmm.
But also not quite regular, but we've seen him twice. Lieutenant Tharl.
Tharl!
Yeah, now there's no explanation really given to where he is. Maybe he's still just on the night shift.
Maybe. That's maybe he was like...
sweating up a storm.
Exactly. He was unceremoniously like shafted from the security chair. And now we've got Lieutenant Tharl.
Tharl. Another Zelayan.
Yeah. Who Ed actually specifically requested that the new chief of security be Zelayan. Mm. So, yeah.
And this is actress Jessica Jaw.
Jessica Jaw.
Of whom's joined the cast. Anyway, I quite liked her.
I did too. Yeah.
She was sassy. I like her.
She was sassy. I didn't really get a good feeling for who the character was.
Mm.
And also, the thing with Alara is that she was a fan favourite character, so I think there will be a lot of fans who are upset to see that she's gone from the show. Often what they do when you've got one character entering of whom you're supposed to be quite fond of from the beginning, they'll often partner that character up with another fan favourite character. It's almost to give like a blessing saying, it's okay, viewers, like this is someone of whom you can bring into your life.
Yep.
Yeah. She's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of need to do that, but they didn't do that with this character, which I thought was interesting.
No, they paired her with Dr. Claire Finn. Though I do love her a lot, but obviously she's no Bortus.
No.
Well, I kind of got the feeling that they were setting her up to be a real kind of like hard-ass new chief of security, going to whip this ship up into shape and probably bend a few kind of like noses and that kind of thing. But then that kind of shifted throughout and actually ended up quite liking it. Because she's a really kind of like no-nonsense, badass, punched her last captain in the face kind of lady.
Yeah, I got a lot of time for her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard.
Okay, I think we've covered everything here, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Welcome aboard, Lieutenant. You can take your station.
Thank you, sir.
I really like the framework of this episode in that it's based around the idea of a first contact. Now, in the last episode, we were discussing the idea of xenophobia connected to when a group of people realize they're not alone in the universe, or like Earthbound if there was, you know, discover a new country somewhere, a new land. You know, essentially you got two ways of really approaching it. Either operate in fear or you just embrace them and realize that, you know, you have to grow and sort of step up to the occasion. So coming off that sort of speech from Ed Mercer last week to this week where we are seeing a proper first contact, we saw at the very beginning the people like making that first audio signal out to the world. and it didn't quite feel like Earth when I was watching it. I thought it was a flashback at first, but it obviously wasn't Earth because it seems to be as though that's the first signal being sent into space. But we know that on every day, there are signals constantly being sent into space through our various broadcasting modes. We've all seen the film Contact, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was kind of like Earth 400 years ago, essentially. They were kind of at the point that we are now. And that kind of comes up when Claire and Lieutenant Tala are getting a tour of the hospital and they're looking at their medical tech and they're like, oh, this is, it's like looking into your past. And that's kind of what it was like. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. And I kind of enjoyed just the way that when they first landed, everything seemed very happy and very jovial and it seemed like a very nice first contact and everything was going well, which immediately means that things are going to go very poorly very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But as that was happening, Sid very quickly said, they're wearing what looks like World War II Nazi uniforms.
Yeah, they were just, they were really kind of like schmick high collar, breast military pockets. Yeah, you knew that there was something kind of off about them. Also really like drab and grey. Very kind of,
Yeah, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's definitely onto something there.
Yeah.
And they kind of seemed a little bit, and it was, you know, obviously hearkening from the same sort of design sense, the film Starship Troopers, where that's very much about a sort of Nazi youth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look, they weren't space Nazis.
No.
They weren't. They were misguided, as you end up finding out as as the episode progresses. But this is kind of the thing, and this is what I like about the Orville and the Planetary Union. They're a very sort of like culturally open and relativistic group of people. And so they approach, I think it's like Planetary Union policy that they don't actually make the first contact. They only respond to first contact. So they're not going to interfere unless someone says, hey, are you there? And like, actually, yeah, we are. There's a whole galaxy here.
This is actually a really important distinction that I think is interesting to explore a little bit. So in Star Trek, they've got a thing called the First Directive, which is the idea that they won't interfere with another culture's practices or try to change the shape of their history in any way. Whereas we've actually seen in New Orville before, they don't really quite believe that exact same thing. So, for example, with the Mochlans, they actively like mounted a court case to try to prevent one of the Mochlans from having their gender reassigned.
That's so true, yeah.
So we saw that. And then in this one here, they've made another step as well where they put the fake star into the sky to try to change the political viewpoints of those on the planet in order to shape the ideologies and meet their own like personal preferred ideologies. So they're not quite like Star Trek where they don't interfere, although on Star Trek they violated the First Directive all the time.
Yeah, well, I guess one of the things that Ed said in this that kind of reinforces that is, you know, you're not just Rigor 2 now. You're now a part of the galaxy and there's a way that we operate in this galaxy as well and you've got to be kind of prescient of that. So it's kind of like almost like a step up from globalization, but it's kind of like, you know, a bit of a compromise between different kind of cultures and trying to understand how other people operate and that kind of thing.
And I don't know if the Union, though, was all for this interference that the Orville has done on two occasions. Oftentimes, Kelly was like, no, we're going to be court-martialed for this. So, yeah, it's kind of the Orville kind of going off and doing their own thing.
And the Admiral did say, look, you can't interfere.
No.
Yeah, they originally just wanted to blast their way in and extract Kelly and Bordas. But, I mean, that's not going to fly either. So,
can we just talk about Rigor 2 for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
This is their first contact. In fact, the episode is very much about their first contact. Why is the planet called Rigor 2? Why do they self-identify with Rigor 2?
Maybe Rigor 1 was like the test pancake. It didn't quite work out. And so they made a Rigor 2.
Like, how did they do this? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It's very confusing. I mean, I think back to the mid-90s, the classic TV series Earth 2. But, like, they had come from the planet Earth to create a second Earth.
Well, look, we don't know that much about Rigor 2. Maybe 2 is the first number in their numerical system.
Whoa.
Or should I say the second number? Because that would be the first.
I'd like to think, because I'm not sure if we actually saw the planet name on screen or not. I'd like to think that it's not Rigor 2, but it's Rigor T-O-O.
You know, we could make up fake names. They wouldn't know.
Why would we do that?
I don't know. I've always hated my name. I just figured this is one of those times where you could pick your own name.
It's true. You could.
You know, like, I could be Chad, you could be Maxine.
Should we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Now, as the episode goes on, we find out that the people of Rigor 2, there's a lot of premature births taking place, lots of C-sections.
Yeah, something shady's going on.
Yeah, so I immediately started thinking about eugenics, and that was largely off the back of the sort of Nazi uniforms.
Yeah,
but it wasn't really quite that. Instead, it's not so much about, like, the idea of embracing sort of future science, but rather it's a bit more about star science and something a little bit more analog.
Yeah, they're trying to kind of like cut off babies being born in a certain month so that they don't belong to this star sign called Jalakian. Jalakian? Cassius?
Cassius.
Cassius. Jalaic? Jalaic. No, wrong entirely.
Jalakian. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah,
sounds good. But so they're kind of trying to cut off babies being born during that month so that they don't become this star sign because it's associated with extreme violence and like brutish behavior. So that's why they're doing these C-sections. They're getting these babies prematurely born so that they don't become Jalakians.
Mm. And it's very dangerous, actually, as Claire Finn noted.
Mm. And it was just an interesting approach to it. I like, though, that the approach to childbirth there, we actually saw the idea of childbirth through a number of different people's eyes. So obviously Kelly ends up assisting with a natural birth later in the episode. But Bordas, who's watching on, he gives a really good quote.
It is much easier with an egg.
Oh, yeah. And reinforces it after having seen Kelly successfully midwife a Jalakian prisoner in an internment camp.
Now, that's not the only thing he reinforces, because as Shelley noted in the opening to the episode, as she was explaining what's going on, it is a birthday taking place. Kelly had said to Bordas, hey, look, we've got a birthday. It's 6 days apart. What if we have a shared birthday? The thing is, Bordas really not into the idea of that
at all. No.
And I thought he articulated it quite nicely. He prefers that his birthday is his day.
More than fair.
Yeah.
Well, I like that Gordon kind of figured it was because Bordas, he just wants all the presents to himself. He doesn't want to share that glory.
No.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Joint birthday, less stuff for everybody. It's a trap, Bordas.
Yeah. But of course, on Rigor too, when they give away that it's their birthday next week, they immediately get arrested for being Jalakians or belonging to the Jalakian zodiac sign. Mm-hmm.
Get thrown into an internment camp.
Yeah, and then we find out that that's the quirk that the Rigor II inhabitants have. Rigorians? Rigorans?
Cassius.
Cassius. yeah, that's their thing. They basically stick anybody who's born under the Jalakian star sign, they stick him in an internment camp and, essentially concentration camp.
It was a really intense episode, that whole sequence in the internment camp with Kelly and Bordas and them meeting the other Jalakians. And the Jalakians seemed they were fine with their fate. You know, like, that's our star sign. This is our lot in life.
What I didn't really quite get is the father. So the father of that child ends up giving away the fact that the kid's currently being hid under the floorboards.
That was a horrifying sequence, can I just say.
But I didn't understand his motivation on it. Was it just that he figured the child would be discovered at some point, so it's better that they give him up now than to...
Well, he wanted that child to be granted opportunities that he wouldn't necessarily have
But do
been.
We know that for sure?
Well, the child was born because they had that little scene, because apparently every month the high prefect gives an address and says, hey guys, this is your horoscope. You guys are now this star sign or that star sign. We're passing into this month. And that kid was actually born under a star sign called Wasundian or something like that. Mm. And it's almost like a caste system in a way, because the kids born under that star sign are kind of like pre-selected for leadership positions and that kind of thing. So maybe the father thought that, hey, like, my child could possibly, you know, end up having a really great life. Why would I want to keep him in an internment camp or her?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're projecting a little bit on, so that is the motivation, because we just don't quite know.
We just don't quite know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because it's their second child. Deep cut. Sorry, second is first on Rigor too. Yeah. We've established this already.
Yeah, no,
that's fair enough.
Okay, I think we've covered everything here, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
So I had two problems with this episode.
No.
One was I didn't understand the motivation exactly of the father, and the second was the animated section right at the end as they're celebrating the birthdays, the shared birthdays. So Bordas lost his bid for individual birthdays. But as they shared their birthday together, there was an animation that was up on the screen as put together by Gordon. And I was looking at it, and it had the sophistication of a 2002 Flash animation. And I just expected a bit more from the future.
It was essentially an e-card.
Yeah, we've all seen those.
Yeah.
It's like a face on a dancing elf.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Well, maybe for them, that's their ironic humor in the future. Maybe
it's retro chic.
Retro chic. That's what space hipsters do. They send each other e-cards. Yeah. That was your second problem with the episode.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, no, other than that, it was a pretty good one.
Yeah, yeah. It's really tense. It was a Kelly-centric episode, really, and she did an amazing job, I think, especially with that delivery scene. Woo!
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
Yeah.
One, two, three, push!
And also there was a firefight in which she and Bordas tried to escape from the internment camp they'd been put in, which was pretty pretty heavy. Like, they shot up a bunch of Rigor II inhabitants, Rigorians.
Yeah. I will say, while I really enjoy anything that really sort of sticks its middle finger up at astrology, because it's nonsense. And no, it's sorry, not. Just to clarify, Virgo, Leo?
Yeah.
Shelley's a Virgo, I'm a Leo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I love astrology. I'm all about it. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, but it's nonsense.
Nah, look, I know that, but
it's nonsense.
It's great fun.
Yeah, but it's nonsense.
I live my life by it, okay?
But it's nonsense. So anyway, I'm always very happy to, you know, criticize those that believe in astrology because it's nonsense.
To each their own, Dan. Agree to disagree.
I'm very open-minded, except good. About this. No, so I'm cool with that. But the thing that kind of got me was I felt this episode was very much like a season two attempt to try to do what they'd done with About a Girl, which is to take an issue of how we treat our children to sort of adapt and fit what we believe our ethical obligations are for them as adults to grow up. And I think maybe just sort of settling it alongside the idea of astrology really just removed it from being something that felt like it was a contemporary issue and was rather just playing with something which it doesn't really feel like it's an integral part of a lot of people's lives, except for Shelley, who believes strongly in astrology. Yeah. But like the idea of like sexual gender assignment, like that's something which feels very topical to what we're talking about now as a subject. Whereas this kind of felt so far removed from anything that's really a...
Well, I guess
it doesn't need to be a hot button topic, but just something that kind of feels relevant.
But it's not about astrology, is it? Like that, the whole kind of like the fact that they are prejudiced against anyone born under the Jalakian star sign. That's an obvious allegory for other things that people in our world are prejudiced about. It's not that this star sign is really the point there.
Like the allegory just didn't really sort of seem allegorical to anything specific. It was just kind of.
I got that a lot, especially when like Ed and the prefect were talking about the general chaos of the universe. And that's kind of what I got out of this. It's like we can often assign attributes to people that they have no control over. And we can decide, I don't like this about you, but it's not up to you whether you have that trait or not.
See, I think I'd probably have read into the allegory a little bit more if we sort of discover right at the end of the episode that the reason why they believe what they do is because they saw their supernova take place back 3,000 years prior. And so that's interrupted like their mindset as people. If that idea was introduced a little bit earlier into the episode, and from that we actually started to see the fact that, yes, there was this thing where they didn't really understand what was happening in the world, but they built up a society and culture around it, which every society and culture have built themselves up around just ridiculous things that we saw as like dumb cave people. But like if they sort of played into that a little bit more earlier into the episode, I think I'd buy into it as being something which could actually relate to us as people.
Yeah.
But I don't know, to me it just kind of felt a little bit, it didn't quite get over the line for me.
Yeah, I guess like the analogs in our world are like some pretty serious stuff, like ethnic minorities, for instance, in internment camps and that kind of thing, which, the star sign doesn't really get that across, but I can understand what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it also kind of adds a bit of absurdity to the situation because, you know, this is an entirely new culture that we've come across. We have no idea what they're really into.
And astrology is always the butt of all jokes, as we've heard today. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Guys, I don't come to Orville for the jokes. Now, usually on the show, we do like to go a little bit deeper into Orville and find something that we want to talk about. So often it'll be like sort of science aspects or something cultural. In this one, we thought we'd talk a little bit about astrology.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm a Leo. Dan, you're a Gemini.
Mm.
Shelley.
Sure.
Virgo. Hey, Dan, do you follow that Instagram? Not all Geminis?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, Dan, don't pretend you don't.
What's an Instagram?
The stars don't lie, Captain.
Look, all jokes aside, astrology, it's been around for a long time and it's been around in a lot of different cultures. So it's not just like Western astrology, like Sagittarius, Cancer, Leo, that kind of thing. You've got lots of non-Western zodiac signs. So you've got obviously the Chinese zodiac. You've got various zodiacs in like Indian cultures as well, some of which actually cross over. So like you've got a ram zodiac in the Vedic Hindu kind of zodiac as well, which is like an Aries. So yeah, it's kind of like almost a global sort of phenomenon. It's a lot of cultures have kind of looked to the stars to try and figure out what the world has in store for them in the next day or so.
Now, when it comes to astrology, I can kind of understand the idea of specific attributes about a person being shared by a collective group of people who are born roughly around the same time. So I would assume that if you're born at a specific time of the year, based on the fact that you experience seasons in the same way, the various sort of cultural demarcations that we have throughout the year, I can understand that your mindset probably shifts in very specific directions. And so if you look at a group of people born between, you know, the 30th of May to the, I'm trying to remember what happens at the end of Gemini's, what is it, like early July sometime?
Oh,
I don't know how it works. But if you look at a group of people from there, I can understand sort of being born around the middle of the year, you probably perceive the world in a very specific way. So you can probably say they're actually kind of similar groups of people. So I totally get that. It's just the looking to the sky as like some sort of sign as to what you're doing. But yourself and Athena Star Woman would clearly disagree.
Yes. I just love the fun of it. I love the mysticism and the magic. And I'm someone inclined to go to a psychic every now and again. So I'm all about it.
Wow. Okay. My mum went to a psychic. Sorry. She went to a psychic, like a soothsayer when I was born, who told her that I would become a well-to-do engineer. Instead, I'm here in Overland.
Oh, so. Could still happen.
Yeah.
Could still happen. Time. Could still happen.
Now, Shelley, how do you read your horoscopes?
Usually.
In the olden days, people would have like magazines and read in newspapers.
Yeah.
But you don't strike me as a magazine or a newspaper kind of a gal.
No, I do follow a few, as I mentioned before, Instagram meme pages that often drop daily horoscopes.
So that just comes up with like the horoscope each
day. Yeah, in the
And do you follow your own or do you see like a number of people's horoscopes and then share them with like colleagues? And
I do occasionally, yeah. And a past colleague.
Sorry, I only asked that because I know that you used to harass me when I was sitting in your team for a while.
My past colleague, she would read it out every day and we would get very excited about it. And
I know, because I would sit next to both of you.
Yeah, you would listen.
Yeah.
It very much framed the day. It kind of gave you something to think about and to reference against. And it inspires me. It inspires me.
So I love it. You use it to kind of like justify the day as it's about to happen.
Yeah.
See, I on occasion kind of like read over them out of morbid curiosity. And for me, it's like it's slightly different because I look at it and sometimes maybe it'll spark another way of thinking about something that I just experienced.
Ooh.
So that I mean, I can understand it as like a self-reflection tool.
I think it is for me as well. However you look at it, it's a great tool. It's an inspiring tool. It's just a nice way to look at the world. So there's no harm in astrology. Let's all get on board.
Dan Barrett smiling politely.
Such a Gemini thing to say.
Stars don't lie.
Well, look, I don't want to burst your bubble, Shelley, but you do know that the Earth kind of wobbles on its axis and that the stars kind of aren't constant.
Are you going to tell me that when astrology was kind of founded 3,000 years ago that the stars were in a completely different position?
All I'm going to say is that the North Star is Polaris, right? Like that's what we take for granted. Back when the pyramids were constructed, it wasn't. It was a star in the constellation Draco. And for that reason, all the horoscopes are actually kind of out of whack and they'll change every like few thousand years. So it's always fluid. It's always constant.
Right. So are we not really what we say we are?
Well, when no one's ever really who they say they are.
True. It's getting deep.
Dude, horoscope kind of mic drop. But
why did you look directly at me with the idea that I'm not who I say I am?
Yeah, I did kind of dart across.
Yeah, what was that about?
Stare at you, I don't
Dan
know.
Dan actually writes horoscopes.
The stars don't lie.
But yeah, I mean, it's not an exact not science.
No.
But
here's a suggestion for Orville Land going forward. Let's open with our horoscopes. Shall we do that?
No.
Yeah.
Look, what if we
put
just,
it in the maybe part?
What if we just quietly read our horoscopes before we walk into the studio?
I think that's a nice idea.
It's an idea. We've got one final piece of business we need to work through before the end of this here podcast. Guys, Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo.
Our Lord and Savior, Ted Danson.
The one and only.
The one and only. I've got a theory when it comes to Ted Danson. I kind of feel that everyone's first Ted Danson is like their Ted Danson.
Mm.
And so I thought I'd pose it to you guys. Who's your first Ted Danson and is it your Ted Danson? Back up my theory, please.
I'll try to. Well, I guess my first Ted Danson is Bored to Death Ted Danson.
Yeah.
And look, he's up there. No, wait, he's not.
Who's your first Ted Danson?
My first Ted Danson is Ted Danson reprising his role from Cheers in Frasier Ted Danson.
Whoa.
But Bored to Death Ted Danson is my Ted Danson.
Well, that's nice.
But I mean, that's really just like one episode. It's not like it's an ongoing Ted Danson.
Yeah, it's not an ongoing Ted Danson. So Bored to Death Ted Danson. Yeah. Let's say that. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Shelley, who's your Ted Danson?
It's got to be Becker. Grumpy old Becker.
And who's your first Ted Danson?
He was. My family and I would watch that religiously. It's fabulous.
No, look, it's something.
It's everybody's favorite. right?
Sure. In my mind, it's the astrology of Ted Danson's career.
Hey, yeah. That's why I like it.
For me, it was really Cheers. I grew up as a child of the 80s going into the 90s, and Cheers is absolutely where it's at for me. And I'll be honest, I still watch a lot of Cheers to this day.
To this day.
Like, way too much.
Whoa.
And there's no such thing as too much Cheers.
Nah, it's not.
No. Yeah. It's the place where everyone knows your name, Shelley. We're expecting to see Ted Danson back, right?
Yes, he has to be. Yeah.
Hopefully Admiral Ted Danson will become our favourite Ted Danson.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah. You wanna be where
everybody knows your name. What was our favourite moments of the episode? Shelley, we're going to go with you first. What was your favourite moment?
Look, bear with me here. I have a bit of a wild theory. I loved the name of the episode, All the World is Birthday Cake. It's that George Harrison song. And I was reading the lyrics and there's a line in it that says, it's too much with your long blonde hair and your eyes are blue, okay? And at the end, there was that whole scene with Ed and Kelly, or is that Will They, Won't They? I think possibly it's about Kelly and that longingness that Ed still possibly feels for her. Is the song a reference to that relationship? Maybe, maybe not, but I don't know. I love where this is going with the two of them.
That's far-fetched, but that was a significant look.
Yeah, it was. I was digging deep around the George Harrison archives, so that's what I was doing today.
Look, I'm willing to go for that. Sid, what was your moment?
Well, I actually really liked that subtle subversion of the, like, inspirational quote trope where Ed's giving a toast at the dinner where they're hanging out with the Gregorians, and he says that really lovely thing.
In the vast emptiness of the universe, we have found a fullness of cultural diversity. And when a first contact unfolds like this, the cosmos becomes a living, breathing organism, so that within that emptiness, we become a way for the universe to know itself.
And you're like, oh, that's arousing and inspirational. And then he goes, oh yeah, well, actually I kind of plagiarized it from Nine Places. I really like that because it's a Carl Sagan quote and everyone should dig Carl Sagan.
Yeah, my moment from this week's episode was the exact same scene. They're sitting down having dinner and they start talking about the idea of societal burdens.
So it really is a utopia. No societal burdens.
I mean, we still have like in-laws and things like that, but...
Like in-laws. Very funny. Ho, ho, ho.
I feel like that is a thing. They wouldn't have picked that song unless it was something to do with that. Or is it more to do with like George Harrison's idea about the world and being together and sharing what you have in
Shelley,
the world.
We've since moved on to other people's favourite moments.
It's not George Harrison land.
Damn it.
Okay, guys, we've got the space crazies about us now.
We do.
We're going to wind this thing up. Folks, if you've enjoyed this episode of Orville Land, we'd like to remind people that you should watch the show The Orville beforehand, because this show does not make any sense unless you've watched the TV show component of the podcast show.
Yeah, it really just doesn't make any sense anyway. But
yeah, just generally. So anyway, you can find that on a number of platforms. Broadcast TV is one. Sid, how do people watch the show?
Well, if you're at home on a Friday night, like Dan and I usually are. Not together. Although that could... No.
We could.
You want to come over and watch Orville on SBS Viceland at 9 p.m. this Friday?
Yeah, sure.
Hey guys, Geminis and Leos I think are pretty compatible.
Really?
Well, just putting it out there.
Dan, let's give it a shot.
I'm married to a Leo.
Hey, there you go. Yeah.
Which is not me, but...
No, but it could be.
But either way...
If the laws in this country were a little bit more forgiving, Sid.
Which they are now. They are now.
No, well, for three.
Oh, yeah, true. True. But yeah, look, the cut and thrust of it is watch it on SBS Viceland at 9 p.m. on Friday nights.
Shelley, are you interested in joining our little menage a SBS watching?
Very much so, though it doesn't have to just be on Fridays. It can be anytime, anywhere with your chosen device.
That's spoken like a true marketing executive.
Yeah, just grab your device of your choice and download that SBS On Demand app.
What if my device happens to be a toaster?
Ooh, then you may be in a world of hurt.
Please check the SBS website for compatible devices.
Perfect.
Folks, this has been Orville Land. If you like the podcast, please leave reviews on your podcast platforms of choice, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, whatever casting device you like. Leave reviews. It helps people find the show, and preferably nice reviews.
Please.
We'd
preferably.
Look, I'd appreciate some constructive criticism.
I can give you some constructive criticism.
Off air, please.
Anyway, this has been Orville Land. Sid, people want to find you on the internet. How do they do that?
Well, you just you find me by my magician name on Instagram, which is at Amrahs, A-M-R-A-H-S. That's where you'll find me.
And Shelley?
I'd love to talk horoscopes on Instagram. It's at underscore hellbells underscore, that's with a Z.
And people can find me at the Dan Barrett. And if you've got comments about Orville Land, please use the hashtag Orville Land. Helps other people follow the conversation. And my God, has the conversation about Orville Land just exploded on the internet.
Everyone's talking about it.
Oh, it's just crazy.
They're talking about it on Rigor too.
Which is my favorite Rigor.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week, but without Sid, who's taking a couple of weeks off from us.
Yeah, I'm going off on a little adventure, but I'll see you guys in a few weeks.
Fantastic. Well, you can regale us with tales of your trip to Rigor too.
I will.
Safe travels.
Thank you.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.